All right, we are back. CH9 Live. Tweet questions to pound CH9 Live. We have evolved from app. We're at Mix 11, and we have the great Doug Crockford with us. We're going to call this segment Ask Doug Anything. So ask him whatever you want. This is Doug Crockford. If you don't know who he is, you're probably watching the wrong channel. So, Doug, why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself really briefly for people who may not know who you are.
I work at Yahoo. I wrote a book called JavaScript, The Good Parts, and I travel the globe trying to make everybody in the world smarter.
Excellent.
Oh, and so, I fight crime. I forgot to mention
you
that.
Fight, what kind of crime? Cyber crime?
Crime?
Code crime? Real crime?
Yeah, real crime.
Really?
Yeah.
Amazing. All right, so we're going to get right to some questions now. Whatever your name is, why doesn't more ease of use methodologies like CoffeeScript make their way back into JavaScript?
It may. So CoffeeScript is a new programming language that was developed specifically to be translated into JavaScript so it can run in all the browsers. But it has a really pleasant, very lightweight, very expressive syntax. Mm-hmm. So it corrects one of the big design problems in JavaScript, in that JavaScript is using a C-based syntax, okay, which helped make it popular, but really gets in the way of getting work done. Mm-hmm. So CoffeeScript is very much admired by most of the people on TC39, which is a committee that oversees the ECMAScript standard. And I think it's likely that we're going to see those sorts of features finding their way into the language.
Excellent. Excellent. Gareth Lees, is there a simple way to get client-side JS to manipulate server-side data?
Yeah, it's called the Internet. So there's this series of tubes that connects one end to the other, sure, and data moves back and forth.
Well, you know, it could be maybe he's talking in some sense about having a JavaScript client, mm-hmm, and you don't have the impedance mismatch of JavaScript on the client talking to God knows what on the server. So if you look at an example of Node.js, for example, or maybe that's what he's getting at. I don't know.
Perhaps. If you're using JSON to represent your data, then you're pretty much language independent, and so JavaScript can easily consume JSON that's been generated by any programming language.
Excellent. So why did you create JSON? What's going on here? Why did you do that?
So in 2000, I was doing what we'd now call AJAX applications, and we needed a way of moving the data back and forth. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people were saying you should use XML, and we looked at XML, and it was just too stupid to consider, so we had to find something else. And we kicked around a few homebrew solutions, which worked okay, but were not very elegant. And then one day I had this epiphany that the answer was already in JavaScript, that JavaScript object literals were an ideal representation for moving stuff across the wire. And so we had Java on one side and JavaScript on the other, and a very small library would move the data back and forth, and that was really effective. So we went to our customers and said, we've got this new thing, and we call it JSON, and we move stuff across the wire, and they say, well, you can't do that. It's not a standard.
Ah.
So I said, yeah, it is a standard. It's a subset of the JavaScript standard. And they said, that's not a standard. Mm. So I decided to declare that it was a standard. So I created a standards body called json.org, which is just me. And there's a web page which describes it. And I put it up, and that was it.
Nice.
And then it became a standard, and people started adopting it simply because it worked. So there was none of the promotion that you normally see happening around industry standards. This one happened simply because there was a need and it worked.
Excellent. Excellent. Half-Thor asks, Doug, tell us about a big server-side JS web app you've seen. JS code seems to get tangled up quicker than other langs, don't you think?
Yeah, so we're looking at that. So we're doing a lot of exploration with Node. One of the exciting things about Node.js is it allows us to run exactly the same code on both sides of the network. And there's some tremendous efficiencies that come from that. But server-side code tends to be more tangled in that you can have multi-step processes which are trying to get data from multiple things and put them together before they send them to the browser. And there are the naive way of doing that, of having deeply nested event handlers, is clearly a bad programming style. So there are a number of other techniques that are growing up, which all come from functional programming of some sort. So there's a really nice paper about arrows from University of Maryland. There's the stuff you're doing here with RxJS, which I think is brilliant, but not adequately documented. There's the fab stuff, which is great. I'm doing some work with requesters, which are functions which represent requests, which can then be composed. All of these things are much better than the naive technique. And I'm hoping that eventually we can have a beauty pageant where we'll review all of these things and choose the one which is most beautiful and most expressive, and we'll standardize a set of libraries that implement that.
Excellent. So in terms of beauty, though, give us a little more insight into what you think is beautiful in that sense.
Well, for me, the main thing is composition, so that you don't have to write stuff which is deeply nested and brittle, that you can express the code in a way which makes it clear what your intentions are. Generally, the best programs are the ones which most clearly indicate what they're going to do. And sometimes it gets a little hard when you're in a callback world, because it's not clear what the sequence of things is going to be as you're reading the code. So that's one of the things I'm looking for in these new patterns. You know, which of them is going to be the most expressive, the easiest to write, the easiest to find bugs in, and so on. I think any of those contenders is likely to be great.
Okay.
And so we're in a very nice situation where we're going to select from a large set of wonderful candidates, and I'm pretty confident we're going to find a winner in there.
Excellent. So I don't think this is a question Doug's going to answer. So do you know much about WPF, Doug?
I've heard about it.
All right. So let's not go there. That's I bet, but I did say ask Doug anything, so fair is fair. We've already asked this. Okay, so we've already asked that one as well. We can get rid of all those.
Although he makes a comment, using JavaScript as a target is a hack.
So let's talk about that. I don't think it's a hack, do you?
Oh, yeah, it's absolutely a hack.
Oh, man.
So the last thing we ever expected JavaScript would become was going to be the virtual machine of the net, because we thought that's what Java was going to be. So Google is now translating Java into JavaScript so it can run everywhere. Mm-hmm. That's a development that we did not anticipate.
Okay.
JavaScript was not designed to do that. A language which was designed to do that would have some very different characteristics. For example, it would have go-to, because JavaScript has a small set of control structures, and if your language has structures that don't exactly map onto JavaScript, the code can't be very efficient. So, but we don't want to add go-to to the language, because
why not?
Because the web developers will pick it up. Someone will tweet someplace that he made his program go faster by using go-to. And he'll say that without measuring it, and other people will believe it without measuring it, and suddenly everybody's going to be doing go-to. It took us a generation to take go-to out of languages, and I think it'd be tragic if we put it back in again.
Interesting. But, I mean, poor go-to. It seems to be such a... Yes, it can be abused, it can be very dangerous, but in some sense it also has a side that's not terrible.
Yeah, well, the problem with go-to is the humans.
Ah.
The machines love go-to. I mean, you put this number in the program counter and you go over there, you know, it's great. The problem is that humans very quickly create a mess with it. Mm. And the biggest problem we have with programming is managing complexity, and it turns out go-to is too low level a tool. It doesn't help us manage complexity at all. It tends to create complexity.
Interesting. Okay, so HBlah. What is the best editor for JavaScript? I want one that can deal with nested function objects plus obs as return values.
I don't know what that has to do with the editor. I use a simple text editor. I've tried some of the smarter ones and some of the IDEs and found that they didn't actually do anything for me.
Okay.
So I'm still looking for a better JavaScript editor myself. Ideally one that's written in JavaScript.
Interesting. What do you think about link.js and using it towards to JSON arrays?
Yeah, I think link is brilliant, and I think having JSON as one of the things that link can operate on is also brilliant.
Excellent. Doug, is it true that you secretly write VBScript when no one is looking?
No, I don't know why people keep saying that.
So let's talk about that. Why are people saying that?
I don't know why they're
saying that. Where did it come from?
I don't know where it comes from.
What's going on here? Okay. So I want to kind of just talk a little bit more about, while we're getting more questions from Lightbulb, I want to talk a little bit more about compiler target stuff, because in some sense, JavaScript is the virtual machine of the internet, mm-hmm. even though you didn't want it to be.
Right.
And the fact of the matter is, it's going to have to do low-level things, as we learned today, native HTML5 running close to the hardware. Do you really want to have an abstraction layer that's thick or thin? Does that make sense?
You can have layers and APIs, you know, but you probably want to separate that from the programming language. So we're looking at providing a way to allow JavaScript programs to communicate better with GPUs.
Excellent.
You know, that was some of the typed array stuff that was talked about in the earlier segment.
Mm-hmm.
So that's something that the TC39 is looking very carefully at. And it's not clear if that stuff belongs in the language or if it belongs in libraries which are associated with the environment in which the language is running. There's often confusion about those things. Like you look at Java, which is a nice little programming language, and then you look at the set of APIs that it has, and it's this huge, huge, huge set. JavaScript has virtually no libraries in it. Most of what people consider to be the JavaScript library or API is actually the DOM, which is not formally part of JavaScript.
Mm.
So there's a little bit of tension. Should these new things be part of the browser? Should they be part of the language? You know, where do they end up living?
Interesting. If they become part of the language, then that would dictate too much towards a browser target. But I want to ask more questions from the important people out there. What's your view of ES4, ActionScript 3, politically, technically, from Pierre?
So ES4 was a project that began in 1999, when JavaScript could be considered a failed language. It had been put out there by Netscape. It was universally detested, not much adoption. So there was the committee considered that they had a lot of freedom to radically change it in order to try to find an audience for it.
Mm.
And so that effort was trying to create a new language which would somehow have JavaScript inside of it. That turned out to be really problematic because the new language that they were building may have been a good language, but it was deeply harmed by having that JavaScript at its root because of some of the problems that were talked about in the earlier session. So eventually that effort failed to complete and was abandoned.
Let's move on. Doug, how best do you explain the difference between ECMAScript and JavaScript? When is this distinction most important?
Okay, so first off, they're synonyms. JavaScript is a trademark of Oracle Corporation. ECMAScript is not. At the moment, ECMAScript doesn't appear to be a trademark of anybody, although ECMA International is pursuing creating an international trademark for it. You know, the open name is probably ECMAScript. The most popular name is JavaScript, but calling it JavaScript could potentially become a trademark violation. So who knows?
So somebody quick, trademark JS quickly. JavaScript question, thank you. What are good strategies to address the name collision problem? First, tell us a little bit about that problem.
So JavaScript, one of the biggest problems with JavaScript is it depends exclusively on global variables to provide for linkage. It doesn't have any kind of linker or class loader or anything like that. It just throws everything into a common space, and so they communicate through the global variables. And global variables are evil. They make code brittle. They have security problems. They're not good. it turns out there are styles of programming in JavaScript which avoid global variables. So there are module patterns in which you use function scope to enclose your programs, and that avoids stuff leaking into the global space, and that completely avoids collision. But it's awkward to use. So in the next edition, we're looking at a module system which will provide us the same benefits but in a more powerful way, so that eventually we get rid of the shared global object entirely.
Great.
And everything is just separate compilation units which can then communicate with each other.
So now if you get rid of the shared global object entirely, what does that do to your safe scripting?
That's exactly what safe scripting needs.
That's what I'm saying. Okay.
Yeah.
So, but I mean, that's one of the things you protect against today when you use safe mode or strict mode, as it were, in ES5.
Right. So one of the things that strict mode does for us is it eliminates some of the patterns by which evil code can acquire access to the global object.
Ah.
That is an extremely important thing in preventing cross-site scripting attacks.
Sure.
and allowing mashups to happen safely.
Perfect. Okay, Shaka Zulu. Doug, do you get to code for yourself? I mean, that's a good question. Do you code? Do you code your personal projects, or you just travel around the world and go to conferences?
I do code personal projects. In fact, all my coding goes there. I do no work. So I still spend a lot of time on JSLint and on other projects. I'm doing some language design things. I'm writing in several languages.
Cool. Is JavaScript your favorite language to write in?
Honestly? It is. And it took me a long time to get to that point.
Okay.
You know, so when I first saw JavaScript, I thought it was the stupidest thing I'd ever seen. And then some years later, I had this opportunity which sort of forced me to use it. And like everybody else, I started using it without learning it first.
Mm.
And I hated it and found it very frustrating. But eventually I figured out what the language was about, and that it had the lambdas in it, and that it had good parts, which was a shock. I had no idea there was anything good in it. And then I started to have a little bit of respect for it. And I, if you look at the book I wrote about that, it's an angry book.
Where, sure seems it.
You know, I praise the things that it does well, but I'm really bitter about the things it did badly. And so you can see there's a big conflict in the book. Since then, I've sort of moved past that, and I don't pay much attention to the bad parts anymore.
Mm.
JSLint has gotten to the point now where I'm pretty much immune to the badness it can do to me. And so it's just enjoying the good parts. And I've become more and more impressed with the brilliant thing that Brendan and Ike accomplished. In selecting those that unlikely set of good parts and putting them together.
Now, do you think that's because of the Scheme and Self history?
Yeah, he took the very best parts of Scheme and Self and put them together in a way that nobody else had ever thought of.
Excellent. Nice job, Brandon. All right, Brandon Potter asks, what's the weirdest thing you've ever done with JavaScript, Doug? The weirdest thing you've ever done.
I can't think of any weird thing that I've done with JavaScript. Sorry.
Okay. Good question. You stumped Doug, man. All right. What do you think about JS frameworks like Dojo, UE? I don't know if I said that right. And how they abstract people's understanding of vanilla JavaScript.
I think the frameworks are great. Dojo, YUI, jQuery, all of them. The important thing is not what they do to JavaScript, but what they do to the DOM. The DOM is one of the worst APIs ever imagined, and you shouldn't mess with it. It's just too dangerous, it's too painful, it's awful stuff. But the AJAX libraries all do a really good job of hiding most of the terrible ugliness of the DOM from you and allowing you to increase the likelihood that your code's going to run on all the browsers even
sure.
going forward. So they correct the worst thing about web programming. And so that's an important thing. So I recommend choose a library. If you don't know which one, choosing one's kind of a problem because the time it would take to do a careful evaluation and pick the right one will take more time than writing a new one from scratch.
Interesting.
Because it turns out JavaScript is so powerful that it's not a lot of effort to make an AJAX library, and that's why there's so many of them. So my advice is if you can't decide which one to use, then you should use jQuery. No. Let me correct that. You should use YUI.
YUI. Okay, you heard it from the man. This is an interesting thing. I know you have a problem with threads, but let's talk about that. So who is null asks, JavaScript lacks threading support. You can simulate it in some weird way with exceptions and unwinding the stack or something along those lines. Anyway, can you talk a little bit about why you don't think threading support is important or interesting?
Yeah, well, it's interesting, but it's dangerous. So threading is evil.
Threading is evil.
In systems, it's a necessary evil. In applications, it's just evil. So one of the biggest design errors, in my opinion, in Java is that it couldn't decide if it wanted to be a systems language or an application language. So as a result, it injected threads into the application model. And threads are terrible there because of races, because of deadlocks, because of all the inefficiencies that come from them. Mm-hmm. The browser instead it uses a turn-based model, so everything's event-driven. Every turn runs to completion, then the next turn runs. That guarantees that races cannot occur, that you do not need any kind of mutual exclusion in order to prevent races. So it's a much cleaner programming model. Nothing can go wrong. The price of that is you have to obey the law of turns, which is never wait, never block, and finish fast. And that's a different style of programming than people who come from the thread world recognize. So it requires some learning. But it turns out you don't have to be all that smart in order to learn that, because everybody who's ever written a web application has already figured it out. You know, when they write their event handlers, they're actually doing continuation passing. They're doing very high-level computer science, but it's easy, so they don't know that they're doing anything sophisticated. So the brilliant thing about Node.js on the server side is it's taking the same turn-based model that is so successful in the browser and bringing that back to the server.
Interesting.
And so it requires that your server applications also obey the law of turns, which is unusual for some people. But it's not difficult for JavaScript programmers because, again, that's the way we've always done it. We don't have a tradition in JavaScript of blocking I/O or remote procedure calls, so we don't have any of these thread-based distractions.
Interesting. So, great name, the Quantum Fro. What's up, my man? Does technology like native client? So, you know, Google's native client, NACL, or XAX have a place in the browser? I mean, what do you think about running native code in the browser?
I think it's scary as hell. So I have friends at Google, and they tell me, yeah, they can do it, and it's safe and not to worry, and I believe them, but I still think it's crazy.
There you go. All right, Steve, do you think JSONP and cross-domain JSON requests will ever get the attention they need?
So JSONP is a terrible thing because of the security problems. You know, web developers are desperate to move data around the world, and the security policy in the browser prevents them from doing that. But the workaround, which has no security, is permitted. Mm-hmm. So the security model in the browser is just hopelessly bad. And so JSONP can very easily move data from other domains, but if those domains are evil or incompetent, then your security is totally compromised.
Interesting.
So we definitely need alternatives to that. And some of the WebSocket stuff and you know, cross-site whatever are intended to be solutions to that problem.
Hmm. Interesting. Any recommendations on best? Again, these are IDE questions, but let's ask them because it's Ask Doug Anything.
Yeah.
Any recommendations on best IDE to use to write JavaScript code?
No, I'm not using an IDE currently. I've not found one that was worth the trouble. So JavaScript is difficult because it's so dynamic. The IDEs have a difficult place to grab onto a program and figure out how to be helpful.
Yep.
I'm hoping that we'll see more research in that area, you know, providing better IDE support for very dynamic languages. JetBrains has done some good stuff, but I didn't find it did enough for me to be worth it.
This goes back to sort of the notion of a JS++. JavaScript with classes. JavaScript with real types.
Yeah.
Brandon Potter, any recommendation on best IDEs? I already asked this question. Will JavaScript ever be strongly typed?
I don't think so. I mean, it turns out one of the benefits of JavaScript is that it's loosely typed. Yeah. So there is some debate about that. I think a JavaScript which is strongly typed would be a different language. And I'd like to see that design. I'd like to see somebody implement that language, and we can work with it and see if it's any good. Mm-hmm. But I don't think that language will ever be JavaScript.
Fair enough. Where do you see JavaScript in the next few years as new versions of strong browsers are being rolled out? For example, we learned about IE10 coming up. There's a lot of great modern browsers out there, mm-hmm. Ones that really take advantage of the underlying system. JavaScript's going to need to move along and evolve in step, right?
That's the question. Yeah, it is. So I was very encouraged that ES5 Strict is now fully supported in IE10. That's brilliant. So I'm very happy to see that. And I'm optimistic that the other browsers will give us parity soon. The biggest problem for web developers in this age of new browsers is the old browsers. Mm. So IE6 is still out there in terrible numbers. We see at Yahoo, IE6 is bigger than Safari, Opera, and Chrome combined, which is appalling. The numbers are declining, but they're not declining fast enough. And that puts a huge pressure on web developers, where they've got clients who are telling them, we want to use all of this new HTML5 stuff that we're seeing. It's really exciting, and we want you to make it work on IE6. So in a perverse way, going forward with the web is making the lives of web developers much worse.
Interesting.
So we got to get rid of the old stuff.
Yeah. Well, I mean, everybody's trying, including the people who built the old stuff.
Yep.
So it's going to be a matter of time. So we can take one more question from the Virtual Kingdom. There's no more questions from the Virtual Kingdom. We're going to wind down here. Next up, we have the great Bart de Smet, who actually is working on RX and is doing a talk here on RxJS, which you like the reactive pattern,
like RX
the observable
a lot, yeah.
pattern. Very cool. So thank you, Doug, for coming on. Always great to talk to you, man.